Lake Effect continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. There were a couple of really big astronomy stories that grabbed headlines this year involving the exploration of distant worlds, and they were well-deserved headlines.
But there were lots of other stories that will have a lasting legacy for astronomers. We talk with astronomy contributor Jean Creighton each month about developments in the universe of, well, the universe. And she's with us this morning to look back at the last 12 months. Hello, Jean.
Hello, Bonnie.
Well, you know what time it is.
It is.
It is. It's time for the yearly astronomical wrap-up, and we have had one heck of a year.
We sure have.
And a lot of it has taken place right here at home in our own solar system, starting with Mars.
Yes. Curiosity has been now on Mars for some time, but there have been other missions that are still working, they're orbiting Mars, and we're finding extremely interesting things. For example, you know, of course, that we've been finding evidence for liquid water on Mars for a long period of time. Not right this moment, but we found that there was standing water on Mars maybe for the better part of a million years or more. Now, what's interesting, that although the temperature can be, say, 9 degrees below zero Fahrenheit, the water can have such high salinity, we call it, so high salt content, that it can still flow, probably like a slush, but there could be moving water on Mars right now, and we have evidence of that from pictures that are taken from satellites that are going around Mars. We see flows that move slowly down south-facing cliffs, let's call them.
So we have water on Mars, and like just the idea that that's been proven now.
Right, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Then we have the issue of methane. And there's definitely methane on Mars. It's been now confirmed with a variety of experiments. This is particularly interesting because you would think that methane is a gas that's light enough, it would escape the atmosphere of Mars over time. It certainly would have plenty of time to have all been
dissipated.
Gone. So we conclude that it's somehow replenished. And it could be replenished because there's methane pockets in the ground that get released from time to time. But we haven't ruled out the possibility that some microorganisms are producing methane as well. So this is not an announcement, of course, but it's interesting that that possibility still exists. The third thing that we've just learned about Mars is that the solar wind, and this is thanks to the MAVEN spacecraft, we've analyzed now the data of a comet coming through, interacting with the solar wind and the atmosphere of Mars, and we've realized that the solar wind is so strong, it might have been able to strip quite a bit of gas from the atmosphere of Mars and basically changing its nature. We know that Mars was more Earth-like.
A long time ago.
But clearly something changed because the atmosphere now is so low in density that it's not very livable for us. I mean, we would need to bring pretty serious equipment with us to be able to breathe and survive on Mars. But we think that the solar wind constantly has been attacking, if you will, the atmosphere of Mars and making it less of an atmosphere. So that tells us that it really is the solar wind that's doing that. So those are charged particles that are streaming from the sun all the time.
Okay, so Mars has obviously dominated a lot of what we've read about in the news in astronomy this year. But another space article. I was almost, you know what I almost said.
Yes, good.
And I stopped myself from saying that. This object, Pluto.
Yes.
That we just got some amazing photographs.
And we'll continue
to.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what have we learned about Pluto?
Pluto surprised us. It is such an interesting object. The pictures that are coming through are gorgeous. We've talked about this before. We really thought that Pluto was going to be a dead kind of place, more like the moon than Mars. We would expect it to have heavily cratered areas. And yet we see that there are not all that many craters, which tells us that this surface gets renewed. We see flows of ice, and they make these very smooth regions, very smooth terrains. Of course, the heart, we will all remember. The atmosphere also of Pluto is 1,000 miles high. This is surprising to us. We didn't think that that would be the case. So it is an astonishing world. We think that some of its moons, of which there are, I believe, five. Interestingly, we have not found any additional moons as of yet. This is surprising. You'd think that when you're right there, you might find another one
you
that slips by,
right? Yeah.
But no. And it looks, the pictures are showing that some of the moons look like they're a couple of objects that stuck together. So they're kind of, how to describe it, like figures of eight. Things were twirling around and they were moving in the same direction, a gentle collision, and they just melded. So Pluto is going to be a world that is going to fascinate us. We're going to look more in terms of how it got where it is, how it connects with the objects around it, how it compares to other Kuiper Belt objects. It's going to be a while before, I think it's a few years, before New Horizons finds its next target, but it has been determined, and we will learn even more about Pluto and other objects like it that we call Kuiper Belt objects.
Yes, and we've talked about the Kuiper Belt many times in our discussions, and it is that ring of space stuff
that's frozen.
Frozen stuff out
frozen
there.
Frozen stuff, most of which looks like potatoes. Pluto, though, is round because it has enough mass to pull itself together into a spherical shape. We expect that most Kuiper Belt objects are not spherical. Probably most of them look, as I said, like
more
a potato.
Potato-like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the next thing we're going to talk about is been called shaped like a duck, which, you know, I guess we have to name things as stuff that we know every
right,
day.
Sure.
And that is the comet that the European Space Agency landed on, 67P/CG.
Yes.
In its short name.
In its short name, yeah. Since the what is it? Churyumov-Gerasimenko doesn't quite roll off the tongue as well as one would like. This was an incredible adventure. Comets move really fast. So the ESA spacecraft had to travel for 10 years to reach it, even though it's considerably closer than, say, Pluto, that took 9. We needed to use gravity assist, as we often do for things that are beyond the orbit of Mars. This was such a dramatic event. The comet was visited by the spacecraft, right? And it sent Philae, a lander. Now, this lander took 7 hours to drop. And the idea was that there were going to be some harpoons when it got close to the surface of the comet. It would grab on the comet and stick there. But the harpoons didn't quite fire the way they were expected. So it reached 80% of escape velocity. This means that if with a little bit of bad luck, they would just float off. They would float off because these objects are fairly small, so their gravitational pull isn't very strong. If you're moving a little too fast, then you would just float back out into space. So I'm sure that many people were just sitting there biting their nails. But it turns out that it stayed. As I said, it was just dropping for 7 hours before it hit the ground. And the bad luck, it landed in the shadow of a cliff, which meant that it just had a few hours of battery. There was no way to recharge it. And it got all the critical data that it was supposed to, but then it fell quiet. And people started quickly doing calculations and saying, since it's a comet, it will get closer to the sun. And hopefully it turns around just enough. The angle that the rays of the sun come will change and it'll get back some more juice in the battery. I confess at the time I thought this sounds pretty far-fetched.
You weren't hopeful, were you?
Well, I'm always hopeful. That's the nature of my person. But I did think this was grasping for straws a little bit. But lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. As the comet approached, the sun was able to reach the solar panels and Philly woke up. So it's been able to measure 16 organic compounds, four of which were a first for a comet. We found water vapor, formaldehyde, carbon dioxide, carbon monoxide, which tells us since comets are some of the oldest leftovers in the solar system, they connect us to that very first cloud, we call it the Soral Nebula, that gave birth to the sun and to planets. This is great because it tells us that all the cool organic goodies that you would need to make something that has potential for life existed from the start.
That leads us perfectly into our last topic today, which is Earth 2.0. We've talked about exoplanets many, many times, and there has just been this amazing discovery of so many that look Earth-like or seem like they would be Earth-like, mm-hmm. having these compounds that the comet had, as you said, from the start of the universe.
That's encouraging because that tells us that as we discover more and more worlds, more and more planets around other stars, it looks like the chemistry is working with us, that there are a lot of great organic compounds that are out there. So Kepler-452b, for example, was one of these, a planet that's kind of like the Earth. And when I say like the Earth, I'm talking about a size and or a mass. So its size is about 1.5 times the size of the Earth in terms of a diameter. And we know that it's going around a star like the sun a period of 385 days, right? We don't know yet its mass. That's another way. I mean, you need different kind of data than Kepler to find the mass. And we haven't established yet that it has an atmosphere, but we are finding more and more of these worlds. As time permits, we're going to be looking for their atmosphere. And I'm sure it's just a matter of time before we find a place that really is like the Earth, at least in terms of having an atmosphere like ours, mass, distance. We have to be, you know, the term Goldilocks zone. You can't be too close to the star. You can't be too far. If water is solid, like it can be as strong as steel if it's really, really cold. If it's really, really hot, all the water, everything practically will evaporate. So that's not good either. There's that sweet spot. So as we discover more and more planets, we get closer and closer to that question, well, how likely is it that we are by ourselves? And it seems not so likely.
Which to me is really, really cool. I mean, every science and science fiction buff out there lives on the idea of making alien contact.
That's right. And we just love the idea of a galaxy far, far away and what kind of stories might it have.
Right. And would we be able to share them? And I'm ready. Can I sign up? Can I sign up? We've got to get that manned spacecraft thing happening, Jean.
Yes.
We
yes,
have to do
we
it.
Do.
Maybe
we do.
Next year.
Well, we can try.
Okay.
All right.
When we wrap up next year, maybe we'll have something. But anyway, as always, it's been a fabulous year talking with you. And I look forward to our astronomical adventures in the years to come.
Our thrilling 2016.
Exactly.
Thank you so much.
Jean Creighton is director of the Manfred Olson Planetarium at UW-Milwaukee and our regular astronomy contributor.